Tonight on the Daily Debrief, friends and family describe a beloved dentist gunned down by this convicted murderer for hire.
Well, one thing they remember most or miss most, it would be her laugh.
Will the convicted killer be sentenced to death or life in prison? And are his tattoos a memory of the crime? Plus, the suspect in an attack on a Jewish synagogue appears in a Pittsburgh courtroom the same day as this man also appears in court in Florida on charges he sent suspected bombs to top-ranking Democrats. That's straight ahead on the Daily Debrief for Monday, October 29th.
And good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Daily Debrief. A Texas jury today began to determine whether a convicted murderer should be sentenced to death or life in prison. Let's break down the key players one more time in this very complicated case. Dallas area dentist Kendra Hatcher died in what prosecutors describe as an execution-style shooting in September 2015. Authorities say Hatcher was dating this man, Ricardo Paniagua. The problem was his jealous ex-girlfriend, authorities say. Her name, Brenda Delgado. Authorities believe she was the mastermind who hired the current defendant, Christopher Love, to rob and kill Kendra Hatcher. Jurors convicted Love last week. Now they are deciding his punishment. Another woman named Crystal Cortez admitted to being the getaway driver. She pleaded guilty and testified against Love. Prosecutors began the penalty phase of the trial today by calling police officers who had encountered defendant Christopher Love in the past. One officer from Memphis, Tennessee, testified about Love acting as a getaway driver in a stolen car referred to as a steamer. Here, that officer reads a statement given by Love about his actions with an accomplice.
He said, "Stop right here on the same parking lot that we parked on." He jumped out. It was not even 10 seconds. He jumped back in the truck with two bags and said, "Let's go." He was telling me, "Go, go." Asked him what was going on. He said, "Don't worry about it." And then he said he robbed a lady. Then I told him to take me home and he could keep the truck and he could talk to me later on. I seen him Monday, the day after the 4th of July, and it was getting dark. I said, "What's up?" And he took off running for me like I had did something to him and left the truck and the keys. I took the speakers out of the Toyota and put them in my car.
Okay, and then you asked
him
if he was supposed to get anything. He said he was going to give him something, right?
Yes.
He had used a term in there that he had a steamer. You asked, "What do you mean by that?" And what was his answer?
"It's a stolen car."
And then you asked him, "Why does he participate in the robbery?" He said, I didn't know it was a robbery."
Yes.
But later on, he pleads guilty to it as a robbery. Is that right?
Yes.
Another officer testified about another incident involving the defendant, drugs, and a gun.
We did find a gallon-sized Ziploc bag in the trunk area that had what appeared to be marijuana residue. There's a hole in the carpet. What you're viewing is you're actually seeing the grommet through the hole of the carpet. So that told me that carpet had been removed away from that grommet.
All right, what did you do when you noticed this grommet?
So we start in further searching the vehicle, and to search that further, you would actually go up into where the air conditioner duct would go. You know the thing you hit your feet on when you sit in a passenger seat if you're a tall guy?
Sure.
That from there, the carpet would actually go up underneath there, and then you could pull it back to search that area. And that's how I did, yes.
Okay, did you notice anything when you pulled that back to search that area?
I did. I located a handgun underneath the carpet right there by the air duct.
The next witness testified about the defendant's tattoos, what they might mean, and why they changed while he was in prison.
Life or death.
And what's surrounding the phrase life or death?
There's approximately 6 different money signs. It appears to be some type of revolver or semi-automatic handgun. Underneath the money sign, it says one man army, and it's a picture of an AK-47.
Is that a semi-automatic or automatic rifle?
That's correct.
Is that a... and then, do you know what these black dots are around him?
I don't know what those are.
Shame, Mr. Love, again, these are the more recent photos. You see that black dot now?
Yes, sir.
And what's coming out of that black dot now?
It appears to be smoke coming out of those holes.
Now, what would you attribute those black holes to be?
They appear to be bullet holes.
They weren't on there. If we look at states of 382, they were not on there at the time of arrest. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Here to talk about this case now is attorney Matthew Mangino from Pittsburgh. Matthew, good to see you again here on the Debrief.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so this is the penalty phase. The defendant was convicted. The prosecution is piling everything he ever did on his criminal record onto him. I assume that is to prove those aggravating factors to try to call him some kind of an habitual criminal.
All right, this is the penalty phase. And, you know, just like a sentence, your criminal record, past charges, incidents of when you may have fled or absconded on bond are all relevant factors. And the jury needs to have this information in order to make a significant decision that they have to make here. And that's a matter of life and death. And it's also a matter of future dangerousness. Is there a propensity for future violent conduct? And if the jury finds that, along with the aggravating circumstances that are being presented to them during the course of this penalty phase, then they must find him, they must impose a sentence of death.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of these tattoos, Matthew? I mean, they apparently were one way when he was arrested, and they're another way now.
Yeah, that's certainly troubling, and it's troubling in that, you know, it may be indicative of someone who is kind of boasting about what they did here. You know, that certainly is a factor in terms of future dangerousness. This is someone who wants to boast about killing somebody. And that is extremely important for the jury to understand. And I think the prosecution did a nice job of presenting that to them.
Mm-hmm. Matthew, we'll check in with you again in a couple of minutes here. Back to court, though, first, where testimony in this penalty phase for Christopher Love turned to the victim's sister. She described Kendra Hatcher's interest in her new boyfriend and what that sister missed the most about Kendra.
We talked all the time on the phone, and it wasn't uncommon for her to tell me about a date that she had had, but I never got a lot of detail. It was just I had a date, or, you know, I went to this game, and I talked to this guy. When she met Ricky, it was definitely different, and she couldn't wait for us to meet him. And sorry.
Was she planning on bringing him home pretty soon after this?
They were planning a trip to Mexico, and then the following weekend, they were coming home.
Was that kind of a big step for her and for y'all?
Yeah. We had not met any of her boyfriends, so it was a big step.
Did you think this was a different relationship than she had had in the past?
It was. She was talking about getting engaged and moving, possibly, which... Kendra was very independent, and she wouldn't have discussed that if that wasn't the plan. We miss her a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think when we met, you were desperately trying to find a video of her laughing.
Yeah. Wish she could walk through the room and do it for you, because it was so... It was just Kendra. She had this laugh. And I think if you asked anybody who knew her, one thing they remember most or miss most, it would be her laugh.
That sorrowful testimony continued with a friend of Kendra Hatcher's testifying about her skills as a dentist and then telling the jury about finding out at work that Kendra had been murdered.
She was an excellent dentist. Number one, Kendra was incredibly intelligent. And so came with that, her hand skills were very good. And I can say that personally because she has worked on me. And more than that, her people skills. She had a way of putting patients at ease, especially children. She would explain procedures to them, show them what she was going to do, and then do them. And she was... very good with the kids. Kids loved her. And then I made a comment to my brother, who runs my office, and said how weird it was that I was getting phone calls from people that I hadn't talked to in a while, and he immediately snapped and said, "Do not answer your phone." Then I knew something was wrong. And I said, you have to tell me, and you have to tell me right now what is happening. And he came in my office, and he said that Kendra was murdered. And I did not believe him. I immediately picked up my phone, and I dialed her, and it went to voicemail, and I dialed it again, and it went to voicemail, and I don't remember a whole lot after that. I canceled patients until the following Monday. I couldn't drive. He drove me home and then Ubered back. And I looked at my husband and my baby girl, and I said, I'm not a functional person right now.
That's how the victim was remembered in that courtroom today. Compare it, though, with this cold and calculated testimony about premeditated murder from co-defendant Crystal Cortez. She pleaded guilty, accepted a 35-year sentence, admitted her role in the plot, and named Christopher Love as the co-defendant.
Were you an integral part of the planning of this offense?
Yes, I was.
Were there ideas or things about how this should happen that were your ideas?
Yes.
Such as?
Putting the gloves on, finding the weapon, pretty much following Kendra Hatcher. Probably 2 weeks after I met Brenda, we started planning this murder. We would follow Miss Kendra. We would stake out her apartment. We would sit in the parking garage. We would follow her from her job to her house. We pretty much just found out her daily routine. One of the plans were to inject her with the needle. Another plan was to shoot her directly. And another plan was to kidnap her.
And did Mr. Love have a plan that he preferred?
He pretty much said that it would be easier just to kill her with the gun.
Back once more tonight is attorney Matthew Mangino from Pittsburgh. That testimony from the co-defendant was so cold. She says, look, I was wrapped up in this with Delgado, with the defendant. You know, jurors bought that. They put a lot of value in that testimony.
Yeah, what a contrast between the last couple of witnesses. You know, Kendra's sister and her friend, who were very emotional, and it really put a human side to Kendra that the jurors wouldn't have heard during the guilt phase. But the cold and calculated testimony of Crystal Cortez, you know, really, you know, brings this, you know, home. This was a planned, premeditated murder. I mean, they looked at different options. Kidnapping, injections, and the way she testified, and just, you know, kind of a...
She just spit out the facts. Yeah, you know, look, Matt, the defense is saying here that, wait, the mastermind, the ex-girlfriend, Delgado, she can't get the death penalty because she fled to Mexico, and Mexico wouldn't send her back to Texas unless Texas prosecutors agreed to take the death penalty off the table. The defense here for Love is saying that isn't fair to our guy. What do you think?
Listen, fair. He shot a woman point blank with a handgun. For him or his counsel to bring up the idea of fairness seems a little incongruous. You know, it's just the way things worked out here. You had one witness or one defendant, Crystal Cortez, who acknowledged her responsibility and, you know, agreed to testify. And then you had the situation where Brenda Delgado fled and there was the extradition issues that had to be resolved, and you mm-hmm. want to bring her back and make sure that she faces justice. It may not be the death penalty, but she needs to face justice, and those are just some of the agreements that prosecutors have to make at times.
Yeah, Matt, let's check in with you again here at the bottom of the hour here. Still ahead, though, tonight on the Daily Debrief, two defendants charged with federal crimes were both in court today. One accused in that weekend attack at a synagogue, the other accused of sending bombs to top Democrats. Plus, an update in the viral attack in Texas, which ultimately resulted in the death of the man on the ground. Find out why the defense is accusing prosecutors of hiding things from the jury when we return on the Daily Debrief. Opening statements are running a little behind schedule in an Iowa case involving a man accused of murdering his own four-month-old son. 28-year-old Zachary Cohen faces trial over the death of infant Sterling Cohen. Wife Cheyenne Harris, on the left there, faces the same charges as her husband. She will be tried separately. Authorities found the little boy's body rotten and infested with maggots. A medical examiner said the child died from a, quote, failure to provide critical care. Jury selection began this morning, but stretched longer than expected into the afternoon. Trooper who was charged with murder. Prosecutors say this man, Mark Besner, pulled out his taser and shot an unarmed 15-year-old who was riding an ATV through the streets of Detroit. The victim, Damon Grimes, crashed into a parked pickup truck and died. Besner is charged with second-degree murder and involuntary manslaughter. Besner testified that Grimes reached for his waistband twice, leading him to assume Grimes had a gun. Besner cried on the witness stand and said his decision to use his taser was, quote, terrible, but justified. A Texas man with ties to law enforcement is accusing the prosecution of hiding the so-called true story of what went down in this viral video. It shows defendant Terry Thompson, whose wife was a sheriff's deputy, choking and ultimately killing 24-year-old John Hernandez in a Denny's parking lot. The wife joined in and will be tried separately. Thompson's defense began by accusing prosecutors of, quote, deception by limiting testimony about what happened leading up to the encounter. The defense says Hernandez was involved in another altercation that night and was known to be violent when drunk, but jurors didn't hear all of that because of evidence rules. The fight started when Thompson caught Hernandez urinating outside the restaurant. Now to criminal incidents making national news. The suspect accused of opening fire in a Pittsburgh Jewish synagogue appeared in federal court today to answer to 29 criminal charges. The charges include obstructing the exercise of religious beliefs resulting in death and use of a firearm to commit murder, among other charges. Authorities say 46-year-old Robert Bowers killed 11 worshipers, wounded two more, and further injured four police officers. No cameras are allowed in federal court where Bowers appeared today in a wheelchair, apparently due to wounds suffered in a battle with police. Bowers had been in the hospital until this morning. He did accept help from a federal public defender. As mourners gathered at the synagogue to remember the 11 who were killed, investigators uncovered anti-Semitic rants on Bowers' social media accounts. The federal prosecutor for Western Pennsylvania is seeking approval from Attorney General Jeff Sessions, to seek the death penalty. President Donald Trump said he supports a swift execution in this case. Now for other incidents making headlines, here is Anthony Velez.
Here are today's top crime stories trending on LawAndCrime.com and across the country. A Halloween party in a California nightclub based on the theme of the horror movie franchise The Purge turned into a real-life horror story when a mass shooting erupted. Authorities were called to the Sevilla nightclub in Riverside around midnight when gunfire was reported both inside and outside of the club. Officers located two gunshot victims at the scene, but an additional five victims reported to area hospitals with gunshot wounds. Authorities in Missouri have expanded their search for a missing four-year-old who disappeared from his Jefferson City home last week. Investigators are searching for Darnell Gray, who disappeared from his home on Buena Vista Street, but authorities don't believe they are dealing with a case of parental abduction. A search party of nearly 50 volunteers searched the woods surrounding Washington Park, and investigators are working to drain a nearby pond to search for Darnell. Authorities are offering $500 for information leading to Darnell. CNN's president, Jeff Zucker, announced via Twitter that the news giant intercepted a suspicious package addressed to its headquarters in Atlanta. The package was discovered at an off-site facility where the CNN Center in Atlanta is having its mail screened after a package reportedly containing a pipe bomb was found at its New York offices last week. Cesar Sayoc was arrested last week in connection with a string of packages containing explosives sent to high-profile Democrats and CNN, but it is not clear if this package is linked to him. Those were today's top crime stories. I'm Anthony Velez for the Daily Debrief.
While authorities in Atlanta sort out exactly who was behind the latest suspected bomb sent to CNN, Cesar Sayoc appeared in court today on charges related to last week's attempted bomb attacks. Reports from the courthouse say Sayoc appeared to have been fighting back tears during the brief hearing. Sayoc faces these five initial charges, carrying a total possible sentence of 58 years in prison. More charges could also be filed. Federal prosecutors want to move Sayoc to New York, but he will remain in Florida for a few more days while his defense team seeks to get him out on bail. Prosecutors promise to oppose any release because they say Sayoc is a danger to the community. Matthew Mangino joins us one last time. Matthew, let's talk about this case we were just discussing, Cesar Sayoc. Reports indicate the feds have this guy's DNA on a couple of the packages. They have latent fingerprints on at least one of them. This seems like a dream case for a prosecutor. What do you think?
Well, if you looked at, obviously it's a very serious case. You know, these explosives sent to a number of high-profile individuals, including, you know, former presidents. But it didn't look very sophisticated. So I'm not entirely surprised that they have a latent fingerprint and other evidence that connects him directly, you know, to these explosives. And you know, certainly, you know, he's done something which has created quite a bit of anxiety across the country. And I think federal prosecutors have done an excellent job, and investigators have done an excellent job in tracking him down very quickly. And ultimately, you know, he is a threat to the public and should remain behind bars until this matter is resolved.
Let me go down to that synagogue attack that we discussed. Interesting that I didn't see murder charges on the list there. My guess is that's because that would be a state charge, while the federal prosecutors are focusing on the federal hate crime laws. What's your assessment?
Well, that's correct, Aaron. The feds have filed these hate crime charges with regard to the exercise of religious religion that causes death. But the local prosecutor, the DA in Allegheny County, has also filed criminal charges, including 11 homicide charges. You know, so both of these cases can go on a path toward the death penalty. Ultimately, I think maybe the local prosecutors will defer to the feds at this point. But, you know, the thing about the death penalty is, both federally and in Pennsylvania, is that it's rarely carried out. Mm-hmm. There have only been three executions in Pennsylvania since 1976, and that's the same number on a federal level. You know, so, you know, while the death penalty is getting a lot of attention in this case, I'm not sure where it's ultimately going to end up.
It's going to be tough to get there. Matthew Mangino, really appreciate your perspective today, as always.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have today on the Daily Debrief. A reminder that the Law and Crime Network will be streaming a number of the trials we discuss beginning tomorrow at 9 a.m. Eastern. For all of us here at the Daily Debrief and at Law and Crime, have a good evening. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.